and moved on, making it all the way to the camp's fringes without interruption. Varitai were posted at intervals of 20 feet, silent, barely moving sentinels who also offered no challenge as they made their way to the camp's interior, picking out the large tent positioned in the centre. Frentis was dismayed to find 2 Curatai standing outside the tent. The Valerian commander's caution was proving ever more trying. They made their way to a fire a short distance away, hands hovering to catch the warmth, and listening to the faint snatches of conversation from the tent's interior. "Every day we delay earns more criticism, father," a voice was saying, earnest with youthful impatience. "You can bet those bastards in New Kethia are making great capital of our misfortunes already." "Let them," came a more placid response, the voice older, graveled and weary. "Victory always silences criticism." "You heard the scouts yesterday. At least 200 slaves have taken to foot in the last week alone. If we can't crush this rebellion soon..."
"It's not a rebellion,"
the older voice snapped, a sudden anger banishing the weariness. "It's an invasion by blood-crazed foreigners, and you'll not say any different. There has never been a slave revolt in the history of the Empire, and our family will not have its name sullied by the mention of one. You hear me?" A pause before a sullen response. "Yes, father." The older voice issued a tired sigh, and Frentis pictured its owner sinking into a chair. "Get the map."
"No, the other one."
They waited until the sun had vanished behind the skyline, and a flurry of alarm sounded from the southern perimeter, Vinton following his orders with typical efficiency. Frentis filled his palm with a throwing knife and met Renshiel's gaze. "Don't kill the sun." They ran towards the tent, Frentis waving frantically at the south with his empty hand.
"Honored commander, we are attacked!"
As expected, the Curatai both stepped forward in unison to block their path, as a curse sounded from the tent's interior, a broad, grizzled face appearing at the flap, demanding,
"What's all this babble?"
in a graveled voice.
"Not so cautious after all,"
Frentis decided as the knife flew from his hand, flashing between the 2 Curatai to take the commander in the throat. Frentis danced aside as the Curatai on the right lunged, his sword clashing with the twin blades as he spun, his own blade slicing deep into the slave elite's arm. It barely seemed to slow him, his good arm whipping around to slash at Frentis's chest, the swords colliding with a flash of sparks before Frentis reversed his hold on the short sword, sinking to one knee and thrusting up at the Curatai's head. The sword tip caught him under the chin, punching through into the brain. Frentis looked up to see Master Renshiel finishing the other Curatai, blocking an overhead swing with his sword as his other hand brought a dagger up to find the gap in the slave elite's armor between armpit and chest. The master stepped back as another figure erupted from the tent, a tall young man swinging a short sword in a double-handed grip, yelling in anger and grief, his blows frenzied and poorly aimed. Renshiel sidestepped an overextended thrust and batted the sword from the young man's grip before felling him with a swift backhand across the face. The young man scrabbled back as Renshiel advanced, hands coming up to protect his face, a barely coherent plea for mercy gibbering from his bloodied lips. Frentis went to stand over him, the young man shrinking back farther, eyes wide with terror.
"You dishonor your father with this display," Frentis told him with stern disapproval, then inclined his head at Renshiel.
"Master, I believe it's time to go." As he had hoped, Vinton's attack had drawn attention to the southern perimeter, and their progress from the camp was largely free of any interruption, shouting to every guard they met that the camp was facing a heavy assault and the commander slain. It had little effect on the Varitai, but the free swords were soon hurrying to investigate. Only one attempted to block their way, a burly cavalryman of middling years with the bearing common to sergeants the world over.
"You saw the honored commander fall?" he demanded,
a grim fury plain in his craggy features.
2 assassins, Frentis said, putting a note of panic in his voice. "They killed the Curatai as if they were children."
"Calm down,"
the Valerian ordered in his sergeant's voice, frowning a little as he took a closer look at Frentis and Renshiel, his eyes lingering on their inscribed armor.
"Which company are you? What's your name and rank?"
Frentis glanced around, finding no others within earshot, and straightening from his fearful hunch.
"Brother Frentis, of the 6th Order," he said, jabbing his foreknuckles into the sergeant's upper lip. here on the Queen's business."
He left the man barely conscious but alive. From his reaction to their tidings, Frentis surmised he had been a long-serving subordinate to the fallen commander, whose son might well benefit from such fiercely loyal counsel. Dalin waited where they had left him, on the eastern side of one of the larger rocks, keeping tight hold of the horses, despite their skittishness, at the burgeoning uproar from the camp.
"Press hard," Frentis told him, climbing into the saddle. "No rest till sunrise."
The Valerian pursuit proved more sluggish than expected, the dust raised by their outriders not appearing until well past dawn the following day.
"Back in the Earlish, they'd have been nipping our heels by now," Dalin observed.
Frentis raised his spyglass to get a better view of their pursuers. 30 men, all bunched together.
"I'm starting to suspect their best troops are all lying dead in the realm."
He ordered Dalin on ahead with instructions for Ivelda and Lekran, whilst he and Rensiel lingered to leave some obvious traces for the Valerians. An overturned stone, a strip of torn clothing on a gorse branch. He waited until the riders were no more than a mile distant, and the infantry could be seen filing along a narrow track in their wake. They rode on for a time, then reined in on the crest of a hill, plainly silhouetted against the sky. He could see the infantry more clearly now, a long column of Varitai all moving at a steady run and somehow still managing to stay in step. The outriders were coming on at a good pace, Frentis's spyglass picking out two figures in front, a tall young man, closely followed by a burly figure with a discoloured upper lip.
"Grief dispels caution," he thought in satisfaction, turning his mount towards the east once more.
Lekran came into sight some 2 hours later, axe raised as he waved from atop one of the monolithic boulders, the garrison appearing out of the rocks on either side.
"All is ready?" Frentis called to him, dismounting to scramble up the boulder's steep side.
"The Rotha bitch holds the southern flank with half the garrison." Lekran pointed to the box canyon below, a narrow gouge in the landscape some 200 paces long and about 50 wide. The canyon was closed at the far end, where a group of free fighters had made a suitably obvious camp, smoke rising from cook fires and meager shelters raised among the rocks.
"And the hook is baited."
Prentis knew this was a gamble. He could only hope the Valerians' fury would blind them to questioning why their enemies had chosen such a poor spot for a campsite. However, Lekran saw scant risk in the plan. "Valerians see slaves as less than men," he said. "Incapable of true reason. Trust me, Red Brother, they'll swallow it whole and we'll make them choke."
"The gorse?"
Lekran nodded to where Vinton's archers crouched among the rocks, just back from the canyon's northern edge, surrounded by bundles of tight-bound gorse. Frentis began to clamber down from the boulder.
"I'd best take my place. Remember to let a few free swords escape."
He made his way to the far end of the canyon, finding Ilion overseeing preparations.
"I told you to make ready the main camp, sister," he said in annoyance.
"Draker has it well in hand," she replied, meeting his gaze with little sign of contrition. "And since I have trained these people, I'm unwilling to let them face battle without me." He fought down the urge to order her gone. She was becoming less deferential by the day, exercising a certain flexibility in interpreting his orders, and often more than willing to argue her case. It was not necessarily a bad thing, he knew. There always came a point in the order when novices stepped from their master's shadow, but he had hoped it might take longer for her. She still had much to learn, and he feared the consequences of her ignorance.
"Stay close to me," he said. "No more than an arm's length away at any time. Understood?"
Her defiance softened a little and she nodded, hefting her crossbow and notching a bolt before clasping a second between her teeth in what was now a recognizable pre-battle ritual.
"Brother!"
Dalin stood atop a rock, pointing to the canyon's west-facing opening where the Valerian cavalry had appeared.
"You know the plan."
Frentis called to the others as they made ready, hefting their assorted weapons and arranging themselves in a loosely ordered line. They were mostly his original fighters from the Earlish, mingled with the more able recruits gathered on the march, Weaver and his Varitai among them, laden with ropes and cudgels. All had tied dampened cloths around their mouths, something he hoped the Valerians would interpret as an effort to avoid recognition.
"We have to hold the first charge," Frentis went on. "When their lines break, pair off and cut your way to the center of the canyon."
The Valerians came to a halt 100 paces away and began forming up. There was clearly an animated discussion taking place in the centre of their line, Frentis recognising the tall figure of the commander's son as he bickered with the burly sergeant, gesturing impatiently at the waiting rabble of miscreant slaves. "Charging uphill on horseback over broken ground," Frentis mused, watching the sergeant being shouted down before the commander's son drew his sword, pointing it directly at him. "Your father really would have been ashamed, honored citizen." Frentis turned to Ilion as the Valerians spurred into a charge, stones scattering as they labored up the slope. "The big fellow next to the tall man, if you would, sister." The bolt flew free barely a second after she brought the crossbow to her shoulder, rising and falling in a perfectly judged arc to smack into the sergeant's breastplate before the riders had covered half the distance, the burly form falling from the saddle to lie limp on the rocky ground. Ilion moved with an unconscious speed to reload the crossbow, grunting as she braced the stock against her midriff, slamming the next bolt into place and biting down on another, all in less than 3 seconds. A feat Frentis had never seen anyone match. The crossbow string snapped again as the riders came within 20 paces, a free sword tumbling to the ground with a bolt protruding from his helmet. Frentis found himself nurturing a reluctant admiration for the way the commander's son came on, spurs digging into his horse's flanks as he strove to get to grips with his father's murderer, blind hate and rage writ large on his face, seeking to wipe away his shame with courage, a courage that made him oblivious to the fact that the ground had disordered his company and he had outpaced his men to charge alone. Frentis ran towards a nearby boulder, the hate-filled Valerian now no more than 10 feet away, veering to intercept him. He leapt atop the boulder, bringing him level with the sun, whirling to deliver a slash that connected with his long-bladed cavalry sword, the order blade shattering it above the hilt. The Valerian hauled his horse to a halt and tried to wheel it around, fumbling for a spare short sword strapped to his saddle, then arching his back as Ilion's crossbow bolt slammed into it. She ran in as he fell, pinning him to the ground with a boot to his neck and raising her dagger. "Leave him," Frentis said, striding forward to slam his sword pommel into the Valerian's temple, leaving him senseless. "We'll see what he has to tell us later." He surveyed the fight unfolding around them, feeling an indulgent pride in the way the Valerian charge had been successfully blunted, the fighters leaping from rocks to unhorse the riders, whilst Weaver's Varietai tripped horses with their ropes or dragged the cavalrymen from the saddle before closing in with cudgels flailing. It was done in a few moments, a dozen riderless horses trotting back into the depths of the canyon, every Valerian killed or captured. Their own casualties had been light, 4 killed and 10 wounded. But of course the real battle was yet to begin. The Varietai came on with a typical indifference, although the slaughter meted out to the free-sword cavalry had clearly alarmed their officers from the way they spurred their horses to the rear of the column whilst ordering the battalion onward. The Varietai spread out to form an offensive line, 4 companies deep, each of 4 close-packed ranks, the first advancing with their unnerving, faultless rhythm, broad-bladed spears held level at waist height. When the Varietai had covered 2/3 of the canyon's length, the archers rose from their hiding places to begin their work. Although few in number, their skills were all well honed by now. The arrow stormed thin, but deadly as it claimed a dozen Varietai with every volley. But as ever, the slave soldiers barely seemed to notice, coming on with their unfaltering stride, only the slightest ripple of discord in their ranks. The first bundle of flaming gorse arced down from the canyon wall to land directly in front of the first rank, white smoke billowing, quickly followed by more, until it appeared as if the sky were raining great flaming hailstones. A pall of smoke soon covered the canyon floor from end to end, the Varietai concealed by the choking mist. Frentis fixed the dampened cloth over his mouth and raised his sword, turning to address the surrounding fighters. "Fight well, and may the departed guide your hand!" They charged forward in a dense knot, running blindly through the smoke to slam into the lead company of Varietai. The momentum of the charge enough to carry them through all 4 ranks. Frentis and Ilion moving in a circular dance, cutting down Varietai left and right. All was soon a confusion of clashing metal and screams of pain or fury. Sometimes they would find themselves in a crush of opponents, shoving and stabbing as they stumbled over the dead. At others, all opposition would disappear, leaving them isolated in a world of shifting white smoke, as the cacophony of battle raged unseen on all sides. Frentis caught glimpses of the freed Varatai at work, dragging their enslaved brothers down and beating them unconscious. But most sights were scenes of slaughter, the Garrisai going about their tasks with all the skill and fury earned in the Varicum. Frentis found himself momentarily distracted by the sight of Ivelda and two other Garrisai being lifted by their fellows and thrown over a line of Varatai, twisting in the air like acrobats at the summertide fair, to land and assault their enemy from the rear.
Brother!
Ilion's warning came a fraction too late, Frentis whirling to confront a free sword officer charging out of the smoke on horseback, too close to dodge. He leapt forward instead, grabbing hold of the horse's bridle and wrapping his legs around its neck. The animal reared as its rider hacked at Frentis. The blow was poorly aimed, but left a shallow cut on his forearm, forcing him to lose his grip. He landed hard on the rocky ground, the air forced from his lungs by the impact. He rolled, trying to rise, dragging smoke-laden air into his throat and choking. The free sword was far more skilled a rider than the commander's son, and brought his horse around in a swift display of excellent horsemanship, spurring forward with his sword drawn back for a decapitating swipe at Frentis's neck. Ilion's throwing knife smacked into the rider's face just above the chin guard, forcing him to veer away, though his horse's flank still connected painfully with Frentis as he managed to gain his feet, sending him sprawling once more. He gulped more tainted air and forced himself upright, searching frantically for the rider but finding the saddle now empty. His eyes caught a vague flurry of shadows in the smoke, a dozen feet away, and he ran towards it, finding Ilion confronting the now unseated rider. Despite the knife embedded in his cheek, the Valerian was assailing the sister with a series of expert blows, his long cavalry sword a blur as he advanced, bloodied face snarling. Ilion blocked every stroke and leapt to deliver a kick to the side of his face, driving the throwing knife deeper. The Valerian staggered back, blood flowing thick from his mouth as he sank to his knees, staring up at Ilion. All fury faded as his eyes held a desperate entreaty. Frentis paused to catch his breath, the sounds of battle fading around them, along with the smoke, revealing the ruin of the Varatai's battalion, their neatly ordered lines shattered into ever-diminishing knots of resistance. Even they couldn't maintain a formation when blind. He moved to Ilion's side as she stood watching the Valerian die. "Killing without need is against the faith," she explained in answer to Frentis's raised eyebrow. "Quite so, sister," he said, briefly clasping her shoulder before moving on to seek out Lekran and ensure some survivors were allowed to flee. "Quite so." She feels his return with a rush of joy, untarnished by the fierce enmity with which he colours his mind. The long days of his absence have been hard. Loneliness, once a long-forgotten sensation, has been difficult to master, provoking a despairing ache as she indulges in memories of their glorious time together. Instead of his voice this time, he offers a vision. From the clarity, she judges he has spent a long time viewing this scene, trying to capture every detail. She deduces that his return is not accidental, whatever contrivance he has used to mask his dreams now removed. He wants her to see. 1,000 or more Varatai and free swords lie dead in a canyon, somewhere in the hill country east of New Kethia, to judge by the landscape. People in mismatched armor wander among the dead, finishing the wounded and gathering weapons. She finds herself smiling in amusement. "You win a victory, beloved," she tells him. "How delightful. I've been searching for some excuse to execute the governor of Eskethia." The enmity deepens, the thoughts coalescing into words, her heart leaping at the sound of his voice. "Come and face me. We will finish this." She sighs, pushing a hand through her hair and letting her gaze wander over the great ocean stretching away from the cliff. It is starting to rain. The northwestern coastline is ever damp in winter, though the seas are calmer than expected. Her slaves scurried forward, bearing an awning, keen to shield the Empress from the elements. She dismisses them with an irritated wave. They are expert slaves, attentive in the extreme, but for a woman accustomed to privation and danger, their devotion to her comfort is an annoyance, leaving scant regret at their imminent fate. "I'm sorry, beloved," she tells him, eyes now fixed on the horizon and her heart beating faster with the joy of anticipation. "But I have business here. You'll have to amuse yourself with my slaves for a while longer." The enmity subsides, transforming into a reluctant curiosity. She laughs, exulting as the first masts appear on the horizon, raising her gaze to the sky and finding it rich in clouds. She beckons the captain of her escort to her side, an Arisai like the others, promoted due to his slightly more controlled viciousness. "Kill the slaves," she tells him. "Also, we passed a village a mile back. There can be no witnesses to my presence here. See to it."
"Empress?"
He bows, his expression one of near adoration, though like the others, cruelty is rarely absent from his eyes. He turns away, moving towards the slaves and drawing his sword. Her limbs tremble as she turns back to the sea, deaf to the screams as she summons the gift. She is slightly regretful at the necessity, having grown fond of this shell. But another awaits her in Volar, this one a little taller, though not quite so athletic. "Formalities must be observed, my love," she tells him, raising her arms and focusing on the clouds, watching them dance in response to the gift. "It is time for an empress to greet a queen." Chapter 11 Valin. The next storm lasted longer than the first. 2 full days of labouring along behind Kara's gift-crafted shield. The constant exertion had forced her to reduce its reach, obliging them to move in a dense clutch, Orvin's guardsmen walking shoulder to shoulder with Ulturk's centaur. For all the jostling and unwelcome proximity, there was no trouble. The ferocity of the storm raging on all sides left little room for other preoccupations. Kara began to falter on the second day, stumbling to her knees several times and only managing to maintain the shield by sharing with both Kiral and Markan at once. By the time night fell, the other gifted had all shared to the point of collapse, and Kara was barely conscious, mumbling in delirium as blood flowed from her nose and eyes. "We have to end this," Lorcan railed at Valin, barely able to stand himself. "Any more and she'll die." Valin turned to Wise Bear, with a questioning glance. The old shaman frowned and pushed his way to the edge of the company, poking his staff beyond the shield wall into the howling white fury beyond. "Wind dies, but slowly," he reported. He hesitated, glancing back at Kara, then straightened with decision. "Make circle. Horses on outside. Cover all flesh. Keep tight together." It took some awkward maneuvering to arrange the horses and ponies in a circle, by which time Kara had weakened yet further. "Stop now, little bird," Wise Bear said, maintaining his habit of ignoring their own names for those he chose. "Can't," she breathed, eyes closed and leaking blood. "The storm. The price." "Storm fades," he said, putting a hand to her forehead. "Stop now." She groaned, her eyes fluttering for a moment, and the shield fell. The cold was like a hammer blow, raising a pained groan from every throat as the traveller shrank beneath its weight, pressing together in instinctive need. Valin held tight to Scar's reins as Darenna wrapped her arms around his waist, and Kiral huddled against his back, chanting softly in Lonak, the words unknown but the lilting tone familiar. Death song. The horses and ponies screamed as the wind lashed them, some bucking and rearing in terror, tearing free of their tethers to flee into the storm. Scar snorted and stamped, the reins pulling taut in Valin's grip as the warhorse gave a great whinny of protest, threatening to pull him free of the company. Valin gritted his teeth and pulled hard on the reins, dragging the horse closer and pressing himself and Darenna against his side in the hope the faint warmth might reassure him. Scar whinnied again but calmed, probably more from the weakening effects of the cold than any instinctive loyalty. Time seemed to elongate as they endured the storm's assault, every second a test of endurance. The horses started to die after the first hour, slumping down in silent exhaustion, their riders huddling behind the soon frozen corpses. Velin could hear other Lonak voices raised in the same lilting cadence, more death songs gifted to the wind, fading as the endless minutes dragged by. He had begun to sag when he felt the storm weaken, a sudden removal of the blade-like chill. He released Scar's reins, stifling a shout of pain at the sensation of life returning to part frozen fingers. Darenna stirred next to him, a weary smile visible through the swaddle of furs. To his amazement, Scar was still alive, though slumped to his knees with snow piled on his flanks, blinking dolorous eyes at Velin as he scratched his ears. Taking stock, they found half the Lonak ponies dead, along with a third of the guardsmen's horses. Four of the centaur had also perished, all veteran warriors a decade or so older than their comrades. In what appeared to be a Lonak custom, Alter gathered the belongings and shared them out among the other centaur, as they gathered around the bodies. No words were spoken. Their only outward regard for the dead was a brief glance at the corpses before moving away. Velin went to Wise Bear's side, watching as the shaman's gaze roamed the ice on all sides, a worried frown on his brow. "Which direction?" Velin asked. Wise Bear continued his survey for another moment, then lowered his gaze. "None." "But the price?" "Ice breaks all around." The shaman made a circular motion with his bone staff. "Nowhere to walk. This time, we all pay price." They made camp and waited, the realm folk huddling around their fires, the Lonak occupying themselves by butchering the fallen ponies and horses. Meat should not be wasted on the ice, after all. The now familiar booming crack came soon after sunrise. The sound lasted much longer than before, the ice giving full vent to its torment as walls of white mist rose on all sides. Abruptly, the ice shifted beneath their feet, the sky seeming to sway above as the entire field shattered for miles around with a thunderclap crescendo. The subsequent silence seemed vast, all members of the company falling to their knees and staring about in expectation of some climactic calamity. But nothing came. The ice swayed gently beneath them, the surrounding icescape moving in a slow but constant drift to the east. Velin joined Wise Bear at the edge of the fragment where they were now marooned, looking down at the cavernous gap between them and the nearest berg, so deep the ocean water below was lost to sight. "The ice is kind," the shaman said in a surprisingly calm voice.
"Kind?"
Velin asked.
"Islands to the east."
A faint smile played over Wise Bear's aged face. "Home." The weather remained calm for the following week, as they accustomed themselves to life on their new home. The berg was a good 300 paces from end to end, allowing for a sprawling camp, and thanks to the storm, they were well supplied with horse meat. Occasionally the berg would collide with one of its neighbors, the ice shuddering from the impact, but so far failing to crack. For Velin, the ever-shortening days were more worrying than their immobility. The long night was coming, and he had no illusions as to their chances when it came. "You had no choice," Kirill told him one morning. He had gone to the edge of the berg in what had become something of a daily ritual. They were so far north now that Avanshura could be glimpsed for a brief time between dusk and sunrise, shining brighter than he had seen before. "No war can be fought in the light that it brings. Just an ancient delusion," he knew. Life, death, love, war. It would all be played out on this earth until the end of time, and Avanshura didn't care. It was just a star. "These people followed me," he said. "To their doom, it seems." "The song called and you answered. And our journey is not yet done." She spoke with a calm authority, but Velin could not suppress his skepticism, gesturing at the slowly moving ice surrounding them.
"It holds no warning about this?"
"It has sounded a warning note since we began this journey. But it also holds certainty. We're on the right course, The endless man awaits our coming. I know it. The first island came into view 4 days later. A small, snow-covered rise some miles to the south. Several larger cousins appearing a day later. The berg's collisions increased as the flow became constricted by the channels through the islands. After many hours' constant shuddering and an ominous crack that shook the ice beneath their feet, it came to a grinding halt. Wise Bear led them across the now fractured ice scape to the nearest island, taller than the others, with bare rock jutting from its snow-covered slopes. His mood became somber as they tracked around its southern shore, coming eventually to a collection of huts beneath a tall cliff. They were conical in shape, the walls constructed from seal hides over a framework of bone and wood, long out of use from their evident state of disrepair. Many were missing hides, and others half-ruined by the constant assault of the elements.
"You know this place?" Fenin asked the shaman. "Bear people hunting camp," he said, standing still and expressionless.
"We could press on," Valen suggested, sensing his reluctance.
"Find another island?"
"Nearest 2 days away."
Wise Bear started forward, moving with deliberate purpose and pointing his staff towards the north.
"More storm coming. We rest here until it passes."
They repaired the huts as best they could, using horsehide to cover the gaps, the night coming on fast and bringing a bitter wind. By now they were all well attuned to the moods of the ice, the speed with which a storm could descend, birthing a new level of cooperation between the centaur and Orvin's guardsmen. They worked together with wordless efficiency, seemingly unhampered by any language barrier.
"Once the ice made all men brothers," Wise Bear said that night.
They had repaired 5 huts, enough to shelter the whole company from the storm already howling outside. The surviving horses herded into a single hut, with what scant fodder remained. The shaman sat beside the fire in the center of the hut, the smoke rising to a small hole in the roof as he carved the new symbol into his bone staff.
"The long night, longer then. Years, not months," he went on, eyes fixed on the knife point etching into the bone. "No tribes, just one people, made so by the long night. When gone, one people became 3, brothers no more."
He paused to blow powdered bone from the staff, revealing an irregular pattern of dots, each connected with a line.
"What does it mean?" Kara asked, leaning forward. She was still alarmingly thin, but had regained a great deal of strength during their time on the berg, though Valen doubted she could have endured long enough to shield them from the latest storm.
Wise Bear frowned, seeking the right words.
"A story now told," he said finally, his gaze roaming over the gifted. "Story of journey and joining. When storm passes, we make new story, of learning and fighting."
Wise Bear led them on a southeasterly course 3 days later, the islands growing in size and number with every passing mile, some even featuring a few trees or bushes the farther south they went. However, there was little for the horses to feed on, and with the fodder now exhausted, soon only Scar was left, plodding in Valen's wake, with his head sagging ever lower. When darkness fell, Wise Bear would gather the gifted, trying to impart some of his knowledge, though his agitation, their ignorance, and his still rudimentary grasp of realm tongue made it a frustrating task.
"Speak!"
he commanded Darenna, raising her hand and placing the palm on his forehead.
"Speak what?" she asked in bemusement. "Not with mouth," he snapped, jabbing a finger to her temple. "Speak one word here."
Darenna closed her eyes in concentration, pressing her hand harder against the old man's forehead, but he only grunted in consternation.
"Call power," he said. "Not all, just small power."
Darenna sighed and tried again, stiffening a little, her face losing expression and taking on a familiar pale cast.
"Tower," Wise Bear said with a satisfied cackle, adding, "Stop now. Not use too much."
Darenna moved her hand from his forehead, flexing her fingers, a look of confused awe on her face.
"I didn't know. Can all gifted do this?"
"All with power, yes.
Gifts change, power not change. All one thing. Come.
He gathered the other gifted and led them to his war cats, all waiting placidly nearby. He pointed at the largest of the cats, like the others, still fairly ragged of fur, but noticeably better fed than when they had first been captured by his gift.
Speak, he told the Renner. Give order.
The Renner approached the beast with obvious trepidation. For all the cat's apparent calm, she had seen the carnage meted out by Snowdance, who usually appeared no more threatening than an overgrown kitten. She stopped a pace or two from the cat, and tentatively reached out to touch a hand to its great head, closing her eyes to summon her gift once more. The cat blinked, then lowered itself to the ice and rolled on its back, paws raised. Dorena gave a delighted laugh, and knelt to run her hands over the cat's furry belly.
All try.
Wise Bear jabbed his staff at the other gifted, and waved it at the cats.
Choose. Give names. Yours now.
Kara moved forward with obvious enthusiasm, as did Kirol, whilst Lorcan and Markin were much more cautious.
What if they bite?
Lorcan asked the shaman, taking a short step towards one of the two remaining cats.
You die, Wise Bear replied. Don't let them.
Valen's gaze abruptly shifted to Kirol, as she rose from the side of the cat she had chosen, the smallest of the group with a mangled left ear. Her smile faded as she stood and stared towards the east with a sudden and fierce intensity.
Danger? Valen asked, going to her side.
A new song. She winced a little, shaking her head in confusion. Very old.
Very strange.
Wise Bear said something in his own language, as he came to join them, his expression wary rather than fearful as he added, "Wolf people." He led them to another island at first light, the largest they had yet seen, with wide patches of bare rock and a small cluster of trees and bushes on its eastern flank. Valen set Scar to feed on what sparse leaves the bushes could offer, the warhorse snorting in appreciation as he began his first meal in days.
Should have named you Strength, shouldn't I?
Valen asked, brushing the frost from his coat.
Sorry for all you've suffered, old fella.
Scar gave another snort and kept chewing. He found Wise Bear waiting where the island's shore met the ice. Nearby, Ironclaw sat gnawing on a horse's thigh bone.
We go, others stay, the shaman said. Wolf people not hate like cat people, but won't like too many on their ice.
Where do we find them?
Wise Bear's laugh was soft as he turned and started walking, Ironclaw rising to lumber alongside, with the bone still clamped between his jaws.
They find us.
They trekked east until the sky had darkened to black, and the green fire once again danced in the sky. Wise Bear rested on a stunted, plinth-shaped mound of ice, regarding the sky and singing his song to his ancestors.
What do you tell them?
Valen asked when he fell silent.
Bear people still live. I still live. But not long to wait now.
Are you so eager to join them?
To be with your wife once more?
She with me now. Watching.
Wise Bear gave him a sidelong glance.
You think this a story? Your word? The word for not real story?
A lie.
Yes, lie. No word for lie in bear people tongue.
A lie is still a lie, even if you don't have a word for it. But no, I don't think it a lie. I believe your people, and mine, crafted legends to better understand a world that often makes little sense. And a legend becomes its own truth in time.
Legend is what?
An old story, told many times and changed with the telling. A story so old none can say if it ever truly happened.
You had power when we met. Song like Foxgirl, but stronger.
That a legend?
No, all very true. But like a legend, it had an ending.
No.
Wise Bear lifted his staff to point at the swirling lights in the sky.
Nothing truly ends. There, stories live forever.
He looked over his shoulder as Iron Claw gave a low growl, rising to sniff the air.
Many come.
The shaman sighed, getting to his feet.
War party. Keep hands empty.
The spearhawks came first, seven of the great birds descending from the clouds to circle them, occasionally swooping low enough to make Valen duck. He had heard enough stories from Darenna to appreciate the birds' deadly power, but was still surprised by their size, judging each to have a wingspan of at least 7 feet, their beaks as long as spear points, and, he noticed, steel barbs glittering on their talons.
"One shaman controls all these?" he asked Wise Bear. "If strong enough. They see and he sees."
The shaman's gaze settled on the eastern horizon, a disconcerting note of foreboding coloring his tone.
"Few strong enough to bind so many."
The black dots appeared on the horizon moments later, at first only a dozen or so, but soon growing in number until Valen counted over 50. The dots resolved into loping figures as they came closer, moving with effortless speed and grace over the ice. On nearing, their tight group split apart and formed a near-perfect circle, with Wise Bear and Valen at the center. They sat regarding them both with placid indifference, all uniformly white of fur, and larger than any wolf Valen had seen, save one. More dots soon appeared on the horizon, moving with less grace but almost equal speed. The sight was so unfamiliar, Valen was initially unsure what he was seeing, teams of wolves all tethered in a line dragging something behind. As they came closer, he realized the wolves were towing sleds, each carrying 3 men, all armed with spears and flat bows similar to those carried by the Sjorda. The wolves towing the sleds were smaller in stature than those surrounding them, and markedly less placid, snarling and nipping at each other as the sleds came to a halt. Valen quickly counted heads as the men on the sleds dismounted. Over 100, less than their own company, but this was their ice, and they had wolves and hawks. The sled-borne warriors spread out to form a second circle, outside that fashioned by the wolves, 2 figures striding forward to approach Valen and Wise Bear. One was of similar proportions to the other ice people Valen had met, little over 5 feet tall and stocky of build. But the second figure stood at least as tall as Valen, broader at the shoulder, but with a rangy, athletic look.
"You know them?" Valen asked Wise Bear.
The shaman shook his head, his expression now more tense even than when they had confronted No Eyes.
"Trade with wolf people sometimes," he said. "Not live with them."
The 2 figures halted a short distance away, reaching up to pull away the fur that covered their faces. The shorter of the two was revealed as a woman of middling years, with the high cheekbones and broad features common to the ice people. She regarded Wise Bear with an expression of obvious recognition, even respect, though her bearing was no less tense. Valen noted she carried a bone of her own, shorter than Wise Bear's, but similarly adorned with etchings. The tall figure at her side removed his fur mask to uncover the face of a young man a few years shy of Valen's age, the features holding no vestige of any ice folk heritage. Valen's unease deepened as he took note of the man's colouring. Pale skin, eyes and hair dark to the point of blackness, like many Valerians he had seen. The woman said something in her own language, addressing Wise Bear, who replied with a nod and a few words of his own.
"Shaman greets shaman," he explained. "It is custom."
The woman's gaze turned to Valen, her eyes tracking him from head to foot, before she nodded at the young man. He greeted Valen with a cautious smile, conveying a sense of youthful discomfort at an important gathering. "My mother asks your name," he said in realm tongue, the vowels clipped and heavily accented, but still easily understood.
"Your mother?"
Valen's gaze switched between the two of them as he raised an eyebrow.
"Yes," the young man replied. "Many wings.
Shamaness to the wolf people of the Tree Isles. I am her son, named Long Knife by consent of the people."
"Really?"
Valen stared at him and let the silence string out, noting how the young man held his arms loose at his sides. He wore no weapon, but Valen was certain he had at least one knife under his furs, and knew well how to use it. He also noted a sudden alertness in the surrounding wolves, their heads rising as if in answer to an unheard call.
"Your mother is not the only shaman here," Valen said. "She commands the hawks and you the wolves."
The young man gritted his teeth and forced a smile.
"Yes, and we ask your name."
"I'll hear yours first, Valerian.
Your true name. I've been obliged to kill far too many of your countrymen to give trust so easily."
The wolves rose from their haunches as one, a snarl sounding from every throat as the young man bridled, stating in implacable tones,
"I am not Valerian."
Many wings spoke again, a terse few words, but evidently enough to make the young man suppress his anger. The wolves relaxing once more as he took a calming breath.
"My birth name is Asterek Anvir," he said, "and I ask your name."
"Valin Alsorna, Tower Lord of the Northern Reaches by the Queen's Word." Many wings waved her bone at him, uttering a guttural exclamation, her face suddenly drawn in irritation.
"Mother says you have another name," Asterek Anvir related.
"I am called Aventura by the Erhil," Valin said, "and Beral Shak Ur by the Siorda."
"We do not know these words," Asterek said. "Explain their meaning."
"Aventura is the bright star that appears in the morning sky. Beral Shak Ur is the shadow of the raven." Asterek and Many Wings exchanged a glance, faces suddenly grave. They said nothing, but from the way Wise Bear straightened, Valen divined they were communicating by other means.
"Gather your people," Asterek said after a moment. "You will follow us."
"To what purpose?" Valen asked.
"Follow and find out."
The Valerian turned and started back to his sled, the wolves rising as one to fall in on either side as their master cast a final word over his shoulder.
"Or stay here and perish when the long night falls."
The island stretched away on either side for several miles, liberally covered with trees, a steep-sided mountain of snow-speckled granite rising from its center.
Wolfholm, Wise Bear called it in rough translation of its unpronounceable true name. "I not see this for many year."
The journey had taken 4 days hard trekking across the ice, which became noticeably thinner the farther south they traveled. It was unnerving to see through it when the sun rose high, light playing on the bubbles visible beneath a barrier no more than a few feet thick.
"It melts in summer," Asterek explained,
"and the islands become isolated, reachable only by boat, though we have plenty of those." He had been an affable guide so far, unwilling to take offense at the instinctive suspicion of the centaur or the open hostility of the realm folk.
"Offering trust to such as him does not seem wise, my lord," Orvin advised, his dark expression a mirror of his soldiers as he regarded the Valerian.
Like all the men from the realm, he had been forced to abandon a daily grooming regimen and was now of somewhat wild appearance, the unkempt beard and long hair rendering him nearly unrecognizable. "We know to our cost how well they use their spies."
"He's no spy," Kirill said, the only one in the company besides Wise Bear to display no enmity towards the young shaman.
"My song tells of no deceit."
"These people trust him," Valen pointed out, as Orvin plainly found scant reassurance in the huntress's words.
"And Wise Bear trusts them. Besides, we have little choice." A large gathering of wolf people waited on a spit of land on the island's west-facing coast, several hundred men, women, and children staring in open curiosity at the newcomers. Clustered among them were several wolf packs, each numbering 10 or more, with a single shaman at their center, whilst a great flock of spearhawks circled above. Many Wings raised her bone staff to order a halt as a man came forward to greet them, a little taller than her, with a broader build than most ice people. From the closeness of the embrace he shared with Many Wings and Asterek, Valen deduced he was witnessing a family reunion.
"My father bids you welcome," Asterek related. "He leads here. In your tongue his name means Whale Killer."
"I thank him for his hospitality," Valen replied, noting that in contrast to Many Wings, the shaman was required to translate his words aloud to the wolf people chieftain. Whale Killer favoured Valen with much the same scrutiny shown by his wife, though with a more friendly countenance. "He says it is strange when an old tale takes form," Asterix translated. Valen began to ask for clarification, but Whale Killer had already moved on, approaching Wise Bear with arms wide. They embraced, exchanging greetings in the tongue of the Ice People from which, despite all the weeks hearing it, Valen still failed to discern any meaning. "We thought the Bear People wiped out," Asterek explained. "My father is glad to see we were wrong." "They warred with Valerians," Valen said, "driven across the ice to find refuge in our lands. Not so with your people, I see." Asterek's face grew somber, and Valen noted Kirill's sympathetic wince, making him wonder what tune she heard from her song. "We had war," the Valerian said. "It was ugly, but short." The settlement lay a mile along the coast. Instead of clearing the forest, the wolf people made their home amongst the trees. They were mostly pine, mixed with birch, tall and strong enough to support the walkways constructed between them, their branches liberally adorned with ropes and ladders. The larger dwellings were all at ground level, wooden conical structures, part covered in moss, and seeming to flow around the trees as if they had grown in their shade, like great mushrooms. They were led to the larger structure, an impressive circular building constructed around the tallest tree. Its trunk, sprouting from the centre of the wooden floor and ascending through the multi-beamed roof. The interior featured numerous low tables, but no chairs. The wolf people habitually sitting on piles of fur they carried from dwelling to dwelling as the need arose. Many had already begun to fill the space by the time Valen and the others were led in, Asterek ushering them to a set of tables arranged around the central tree. "This is your council chamber?" Valen asked, sitting on one of the fur bundles with Duren at his side. "The place where decisions are made," he elaborated in response to the young Valerian's baffled look. "Decisions?" Asterek sighed a faint laugh, glancing over to where the man he called father was taking his seat, gesturing for Wise Bear to join him. "All decisions were taken long ago, and not by us." Olturk slumped down opposite before Valen could ask anything further, muttering, "My people would have fed us by now, or killed us." The Centaur war chief had lost weight on the march, as had they all, but whilst the others had mostly recovered in recent days, the depredations of the ice seemed to linger in him. Lonak men did not grow beards, and his face had a skull-like leanness, his once bald head now sprouting a disordered jumble of black hair, and his arms lacking the same thickness of muscle. The depth of sorrow Valen had seen in him back in the mountains also hadn't lifted, and he wondered if Olturk was deliberately holding to it, allowing the sadness to reduce him, perhaps even hoping the ice could do what battle could not. "You should rejoice," Duren had told the Lonak. "Now you have the greatest story to tell when you go home." "Olturk never shares at the fire," Kirill said, "though my sister once told me he has a story to shame all others. For Olturk, as confirmed by the Melessa herself, once heard the voice of a god." Olturk slammed his hand on the table, grating something in his own language and glowering fiercely at Kirill. Valen made ready to rise in her defense, but the huntress just smiled, meeting his gaze with a complete absence of fear, and saying something in Lonak, which she quickly translated for Valen and Duren. "A story not shared is a waste of riches." Food was brought in shortly after, wooden platters piled with roasted meat, also bowls of nuts and berries. "Tastes like seal," Olturk observed, taking a large bite of meat. "Though not so tough." "Walrus," Asterek explained, coming to sit down at their table. "Winter meat. We eat mostly elk in the summer." He gave Olturk and Kirill a curious glance, his gaze switching between them and Valen. "You are not from the same tribe?" "No," Olturk confirmed in an emphatic growl, chewing and swallowing. "We are Lonakim. They," he jerked his head at Duren and Valen, "are Merim Her." "We were enemies for a long time," Valen said. "Now we are allies, made so by your people." Asterek gave a sigh of annoyance, but this time refused to display any offense. "These are my people." "How do you come to speak our language?" Duren asked. Asterek glanced at Whale Killer, now engaged in animated conversation with Wise Bear. A tale to be told soon enough. The meal lasted into the night, the copious meat supplemented by a heady brew that smelt strongly of pine. Valen took only a sip before setting it aside, although Alterc seemed to appreciate it. "Like drinking a tree," he said, voicing a rare laugh as he drained his bowl. "We ferment wild berries and pine cones," Asterix said. "Let it sit long enough, and you can use it to light fires." "Lights a fire in my belly, true enough." Alterc lifted another bowl to his lips, drinking it down in a few gulps. As the evening wore on, Valen was relieved to find the hulking Lonak a morose drunk, rather than the fighting one. Watching him slump forward, head rested on his hand, as he continued to down the pine ale, muttering to himself in his own language, much to Kirol's evident disgust. "You shame the Malesa Centaur with this display," she sniffed. Alterc curled his lip and said a few short words in Lonak. From Kirol's furious reaction, Valen judged they were not complimentary. She snarled a curse in Lonak, getting to her feet, her knife half-drawn. "Enough!" Valen told her, voice heavy with command and loud enough to herald a sudden silence in the hall. "This is not your home, and you insult our hosts," he went on in a quieter tone, his gaze shifting to Alterc. "And you, Talessa, should go and sleep it off." "Merim her," Alterc slurred, half rising, fumbling for his war club and promptly dropping it. "Sun killer." He braced his arms on the table and tried to lever himself up. However, the task seemed to be beyond his diminished limbs, and he collapsed, his face connecting with the table with a painful thump. He remained in the same position, and soon began to snore. "Varnish," Kirill sneered, sitting down again and glaring at Valen. "You should have let me kill him. My song finds little of worth in him." "A troubled mind deserves healing, not death," Asterix told her, casting a sympathetic gaze over the slumbering Lonak. "And those of the same tribe should not kill each other." Kirill laughed, popping a berry into her mouth. "Then since we're no longer allowed to kill the Merim-Her, the Lonak would have little else to do." Asterix gave a sorrowful shake of his head. "All so strange, but so familiar." The feast came to an end some hours later, the centaur carrying the still unconscious Alterc to the far end of the hall, where Asterix told them they were welcome to make their beds, the settlement lacking any empty dwellings to house so many newcomers. "The tribe grows larger by the year," he said. "We are required to build constantly." Whale Killer and Many Wings appeared at his side along with Wise Bear, the shamaness pointing her staff towards the hall's broad doorway. "It is time for our tale," Asterix said. After the warmth of the hall, the cold outside felt crushing, stealing the air from Valen's lungs and provoking an instant thumping in his temples. Dorena and Kirol accompanied him as they followed the ice folk into the forest, Asterix leading the way with a flaming torch. The path was steep and thick with snow, the way ever more difficult the higher they climbed, though the wolf people moved with the unconscious speed born of having walked this trail many times. Finally, they came to a flat expanse at the base of a rugged cliff, Asterix lifting his torch so the light played over a narrow opening in the rock face. Valen saw how Kirill and Dorena stiffened at the sight of the cave, and how Wise Bear took a firmer hold on his bone staff. "Power?" he asked him. "Much power," the shaman confirmed, peering into the cave with obvious unease. "Maybe too much." "There is no danger for you here," Asterix said, moving into the cave and beckoning Valen to follow. "This place is as much yours as ours." The cave entrance was narrow, but opened out into a broad cavern, the walls dry and the air musty with age. Numerous bowl-like indentations had been carved into the cavern floor, each stained with dried pigment of different hues. But it was the walls that captured Valen's attention. The cavern curved around them in a long semicircle, two-thirds of its length richly adorned in paintings, the colour so vibrant they seemed to shimmer in the light from Asterix's torch. Many Wings spoke, ushering Valen towards the stretch of wall nearest the cave mouth. "Mother bids you welcome to the memory of the wolf people," Asterix said. Valen peered at the images painted onto the stone, and was surprised to find the paint fresh. The image is clear and easily discerned, a large patch of black paint